Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
What's up on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Time to make it do what it do.
Yes, sir. You know that sound, you know that the trademark. It's what we do every single time we get ready to talk some sports with the 12th man. Wow. It is flying by, gentlemen. Robson out fantasy football, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just, we got the draft happening. It's going to be fantastic, man. But again, America, we are officially ready to talk some sports in the month of August, second week here, the 6th. Let's get this party started. As always, let's kick it out with my fellows. We got a lot of things to discuss. So let's lead it off with my man JQ, traveling world tour with my mama, man, with Muhammad, my man. What's up, man? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm chilling, man. This week has been a little bit more chill. No strippers this week, so hanging out with the family a little bit after work instead of going to a second job. So relishing this week and back to the grind to see all those call-ups and strippers that came bringing up Waters and Pache and Anderson. So that's going to be interesting this week.
I cannot wait to see how Anderson, so give me a quick rundown of him, man. He's been tearing it up and obviously in double-A, man. So kind of curious to see. He was one of the untouchables, him and Waters and Pache, too. So, again, excited about the future for sure. Rob Ford, how you feeling, bro?
Man, feeling great. Ready to make it do what it do.
Habitual line stepper, Rob Ford is here. And apparently it looks like Gary has dropped, but hopefully Gary will call in. I was getting ready to give him a quick shout-out, so we'll wait for Gary to call back in. Curtis is actually on his way to a concert downtown, apparently, from what Gary was telling me. There he is. We'll get Gary back. 2 seconds, fellas. Hold on, America. Gary, you back?
Yes, I'm back.
There it is. I was like, I was getting ready to hang up, man. It's all good, man. All right. We were just setting the stage here saying that that Curtis is going to be, I guess he's on his way to concert, so you're going to have to handle all the Cowboys talk if you're okay with that, bro.
We need a GoPro on Curtis at the concert.
We do need a GoPro Curtis because that's a whole other conversation. I need to have like a Curtis Corner moment for him too, man. But anyway, fun times. So let's have some fun. You know, obviously, again, shout out to Curtis. Hopefully he's having fun as well. But really quickly, we're going to get this party started. We'll sell the numbers to everyone that wants to reach out to us, call into the show. The number's always the 424-243-9519. And as we keep adding layers and people, I know it's tough to get in there and get your thoughts in, but we do appreciate people to call in and tell us how they feel that they actually are appreciating the show and whatnot too. So again, shout out to Naj. Hopefully he'll call again and show us some love too. And Big Mike as well too. He probably will may call during the season as well too, but we definitely miss those characters for sure. Last but not least, follow us in a couple different avenues. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And then last but not least, we are on Facebook, facebook.com/12thmansports. If you type in Talking Sports with the 12th man, you will find us as well. So, gentlemen, let's kick it right off. And, Gary, just stay tuned, man. There's a report that the Cowboys – may let Zach, Deke, and Amari play out the season under the current contract. So, again, we're going to open the floor out to the West Coast. And, Gary, you get the first dib on this particular topic, sir. So go ahead and give us your thoughts.
Well, I haven't heard that. I know that they had said earlier today on ESPN that they had an offer for each one of the players, you know, Amari, Zach, and Dak, that they were top five offers. I know that, you know, Zeke is playing hardball with the Cowboys. He hasn't shown up to camp. that sort of thing. The other guys, I'm on board with. I'm on board with. But with Zeke, you know what? He's had some off the field stuff, and he's a great talent. Maybe the best, arguably the best, or one of the top two in the league at his position.
Ooh.
But I don't like some of the off the field stuff. So with that said, you know, I'm okay with the Cowboys playing hardball with him a little bit, maybe even bringing him back down to reality.
Wow. I'm going to let JQ and Rob talk about this, but just really quickly, it's kind of tough, man. This is not looking good for the Cowboys because you came off of that great season, obviously, and any distractions are not that great. So, you know, I would say, you know, that he's a great talent, but again, I don't think it's looking good for the Cowboys right now. If you kind of now have the time to kind of buck up, now you want to kind of just, you know, right the ship. You had a great season. Get in camp, but stay focused. And I don't think this is a good move for them right now. Again, I'm not a Cowboys fan. That's my little disclaimer. But this is not the time, I would say, right now, after having a great season, try to play hardball. But that's just me. JQ, what are your thoughts about that, sir?
I mean, it's a couple of different things with this story. I mean, first I look at it and say, really? You got a top five offer to Dak and to Amari? I don't think they're a top five at their position. I mean, so those if that's a true statement that they had those offers out like that, and I don't know how the money is structured in terms of guaranteed offers just over the life of the contract where you would see that money if you don't get cut, which I don't think they would cut either one of them. I'm looking like that's still a slightly overpay in my position for those two. The one that, you know, and Gary touched on it, but the one that is actually worth a top five offer is the one they're going to play the most hardball with, and that's Zeke. And I understand that he has, you know, has had off the field issues, but for a running back, I think that's a whole totally different game. You get so many touches, you take such a pounding, you almost have to be able to try to get that contract as early as you can get it as a running back because your shelf life is so short. So I understand people say you signed the contract, but when you outperform the contract, I can understand, you know, trying to renegotiate it because, you know, again, the shelf life is really small for a running back, and he's catching the ball out the backfield. He's a good blocker. He's obviously a very good runner. I agree. He's a top three talented running back in the league right now in terms of everything he can do in terms of running and catching the ball. So we'll see how that works out. We see how they tried to play Emmitt too, and I keep going back to that. And Emmitt held out, and they started 0-2, and they signed that dude the next day. So we'll see how that plays out. But the other piece of it is there's only one franchise tag. You know what I mean? And you don't have to franchise Zeke, so it takes it down to Amari and Dak, which you're not going to let your quarterback walk. But then you just traded a first-round pick for Amari Cooper. So I feel like if I'm the Cowboys, you know, you play hardball with Zeke because you can because he has 2 years left on his contract. You know, I understand his position. But I feel like you have to, at worst, franchise Dak and you have to sign Amari because if you don't, you gave away a first-round pick. And, you know, those are so, you know, so meaningful in the NFL. Yeah, you got to have that. You just can't give them away. And he produced for Dallas last year. He helped open that offense up, take the lid off the top. So Dak could, you know, have that play action pass and open up some of those running lanes for Zeke. So I just can't see that really happening. If I'm them, that's probably where I would approach it. Like, well, we'll call his bluff and see if he holds out a whole year with 2 years left on his deal. Zach, that is. And I do my best to resign Amari Cooper. And then if me and Dak can't get something done, I mean, he was already going to pay him something stupid per year anyway. So giving him the franchise tag, a la what Washington had to do with Kirk Cousins for those first 2 years, isn't going to be as far out astronomically number-wise as it is when they're going to have to pay him the money they're going to give him anyway in that contract.
Wow. Rob?
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is Zeke Elliott, I mean, shucks, he controls he has the power right now, in my opinion. I mean, because right now, for the Cowboys to be successful, they need Zeke Elliott. They need Zeke Elliott. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I don't think Zeke Elliott is going to hold out the entire football season like reports are indicating. I just don't think he's going to do that, especially with 2 years left on his contract. But he has the power here. I mean, the Cowboys need Zeke Elliott in order to be successful. And so to me, he has all of the power, all the control in the situation, regardless of how strong and how hard ball the Cowboys want to play. Zeke Elliott has the power here in this particular situation. Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, the Cowboys, I don't think they're worried. They're, you know, if they can't reach an agreement before the season, they'll wait to after the season to reach an agreement. But right now, they need Zeke Elliott. If this team is going to be successful,
I think with Zeke Elliott, the Cowboys got a strong chance to win that NFC East, especially with that defense. I think without them, I mean, they probably just because the Redskins and the Giants are going to be so bad. I mean, the worst they'll be is probably second place. But, I mean, they have a chance to be a Super Bowl contending team with Zeke Elliott. That's how strong this team possibly can be this season. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl. I say they can be a Super Bowl contending team with Zeke Elliott. They are not a Super Bowl contending team without Zeke Elliott. He has all the power in this situation. The Cowboys need Zeke Elliott. And if they're smart, they need to get him locked down before the season starts, or they're going to be handing the division to the Philadelphia Eagles.
I agree. Reminds me of that song. I got the power. Go ahead.
I definitely would agree with Rob with what you said. You know, Zeke Elliott is a huge part of that, and he does have the power right now. You know, the one thing I can say about Jerry Jones is, you know, he may negotiate, let's say, and negotiate harshly, but he always ends up paying those big time players. And I know that he knows that that the importance of, you know, Zeke in this offense. And this offense runs through Zeke. Doesn't run through Zach. Doesn't run through Amari. You know, they're parts of it, but without Zeke, you're right. So we'll see how it goes. I can see him at least getting two of the three deals done. I think they'll probably get Dax and Zeke done, I think, before the beginning of the season. That's my opinion. Maybe all three.
Okay. Pretty optimistic. Okay, good deal. Yeah, like I said, again, we are all in agreement that the one person you don't need to be playing hardball with is one that you are. Like you said, that was crazy, Jake, you bringing up the Emmitt Smith. Everyone brought that up too. You know, 0-2 next day, Emmitt's in the getting signed, mm-hmm. man. So, again, that's craziness. All right, again, let's talk about the next thing. Again, just really briefly, I'm going to let Rob talk about this because I can't stand the Patriots. Tom Brady gets a 2-year extension and keeps beating Father Tom. What's your thoughts about that, Rob?
Yeah, and the somewhat, you know, unexpected move over the weekend. The Patriots reach a 2-year extension with Tom Brady until 2021. You know, freed up more cap space, and he keeps giving the Patriots friendly contracts to free up more cap space. I mean, I think that makes him the sixth highest paid quarterback in the league right now, if I'm not mistaken. And we all know he probably deserves to be the highest paid quarterback in the league based on what he's accomplished in the league thus far. But he keeps signing cap-friendly deals. He freed up more cap space for the Patriots just in case they need it on a player or two this season. Gives them flexibility from a trade standpoint if they have to. So it just puts them in a position to be successful again this coming season. And right now, I mean, a lot of people are not talking about this, but toward the end of the year last year, that Patriots defense was phenomenal. And they have an opportunity this year to still take less off Tom Brady's plate with that defense, a strong running game, and a bunch of misfits from the receiver position. But they're going to get it done. I mean, like I said, that defense, well, you got to realize they held that Rams team with 3 points in the Super Bowl. That defense down the end of the year, outside of that Chiefs game, was phenomenal. And that's going to carry over into this season with their defense and their running game. And like I said, Tom Brady and his misfits, they're going to still succeed. And they're going to take pressure off of him, which is going to allow him to play a few more years, possibly until 45, like he desires to do. And they just have the formula right now. When I mean they, I mean Belichick and Brady.
But the thing about it is, as much as we hate him, that dude desires winning over breaking the bank. And we talk about it all the time. What is your main drive, your sole motivating factor? And for some of these guys, it's money. And they'll say it's a championship, but really it's money for them. And they hope the championship comes behind them. They can get into a good situation. you're looking at Tom Brady continually to leave money on the table so that the Patriots can rebuild that roster around him and give themselves the best chance to win year in, year out. Instead of trying to take the biggest mega deal that a quarterback can get, that's what he's doing, and it's paying dividends. And I just don't understand that when I look at all the other quarterbacks who can command that kind of salary, how they don't look at it and say, hey, I feel like our culture here is good. If I leave a couple million on the table here and there so I can keep my defensive end, so I can keep my offensive tackle, so I can keep my wide receiver, so I can pay my star running back. You know, those decisions, I just don't see that being made, you know, across the board, across the league. But you see Tom Brady doing it time and time again. This dude's got six titles. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. So, I mean,
yeah.
I can't say anything, but this is the status quo. This is the way they do business. This is the way he's carrying himself, and it's paying dividends.
Yeah. You're right. Gary, do you want to add anything to that, man?
Well, yeah, I will. I heard Dak Prescott say he's not going to do a Tom Brady-style contract, a team-friendly contract, yeah, because he doesn't have a supermodel wife to pay his bills.
No,
I still think he'll be able to pay the bills, though, if he's up a couple million on the table. He'll be all right. Texas ain't got no state tax.
How about they just put up their home in Massachusetts for $39.2 million up for sale today?
Who has $39 million to pay for their house, though? That's crazy. I saw that. Unless
so,
you just want
to have
Tom Brady's
own
house.
Money,
I mean,
to make soon they sell that house.
I want to see if they get that from what they listed at. If they get $39 million for that house, that is a wow.
It's going to happen, JQ. It's going to happen. But, no, like I said, I think at the end of the day, you know, obviously we do like to, you know, again, beat up Tom Brady in an instant. But, again, he's living his best life because, again, he's got supermodel wife. He's got making the right moves as far as being a good guy by taking a cap-friendly deal and helping the squad, man. So, again, it's like, damn it, Tom, man, you got some flaws, bro. Anyway, but, you know, hey, good for him, man. Keep it going. He's making more than enough money in endorsements, too, so I think he's fine.
Right.
For sure. Let's talk about this. We got 42 minutes here. We're just, you know, cruising along for the show. And I guess let's talk about the Browns here. And the Browns made a lot of moves. I don't know if you guys had a chance to catch a little Hard Knocks. That was interesting to see the difference between what they are and what they are today. And I guess the question is, are they going to live up to their potential? Because, again, adding a huge receiver and OBJ, you know, obviously, after a while, what does they say, that the state that the sun's going to shine on the dogs, but every now and then, they are going to eventually get it right. So is this the year that they get it right? All that talent is finally starting to kind of like hit in, and all you need is somebody who's kind of stabilize them. So, JQ, I know you hate to talk about him, but in the division, man. So here you go. What do you think about this?
Well, I'll take it back to a conversation I think that we had a few months ago when me and Rob talked about this. And I think the really thing that comes down to is the chemistry in that locker room, and can they keep OBJ under control? Is Landry and his friendship with him strong enough to keep him from not tearing him apart but causing the distractions that he caused in New York? I feel like that Landry's his relationship is good enough. And I hear what Rob saying, what we saw, and I'm not sure if that's it, but if that's going to work out that way. But I really think that's going to be probably the one thing that could cause some rift and some angst and some tension in that locker room if he gets to acting a fool, if Landry catches too many balls more than he does and he doesn't have a chance to shine. But then Baker, being a young quarterback, is not going to hold back. You've already seen him get after his wide receivers in practice. If he then calls him out, like he called out the running back, Duke Johnson, for not being able for wanting a new deal. So if he does that and then, you know, OBJ gets in his feelings, that could keep them from realizing their potential. But if those things work out, if you on paper, they are one of the best Browns teams. I know that's not saying a whole bunch, but that's one of the best Browns teams they probably have had in a long, long time. I don't know what their feeling is quite yet, because I really want to see on paper it's good and defense looks better. But until we see those guys go out there and perform with all the expectations, because it's one thing to do it when nobody's paying attention to you, you kind of fly under the radar and ball out. But when the expectations are on you and the light is shining the brightest, can you rise to the occasion? So I think I'm going to go right now with yeah, because on paper they have it all. It's not like anybody is overselling what they have on paper and the production those guys have had. And then you look at the potential that a Baker Mayfield has when you give him those kind of weapons. I think you get a Kareem Hunt back as well to pair him. Sorry, you talked to dude's name from Georgia. They could really be stupid.
They agree.
And they just need the defense. Just kind
of.
They just need their defense to just kind of keep them in there.
Yeah.
They just kind of need to keep them, you know, don't make it have to be a Kansas City thing. Like last year, Patrick Mahomes had to score 50 points every game to win. If they can keep a team, they can give up 21 points a game. I think that offense can score 24 to 28 points a week, and they can get wins. So for right now, until I see otherwise, I'm going to say yeah, as much as I hate it, because they are fully loaded on paper.
Wow. Rob?
Yeah, I've been saying all along. I think this is a year the Cleveland Browns have their breakthrough. When you look at an ascending quarterback in Baker Mayfield, when you look at the weapons that they have on offense, from Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., they're stacked at the running back position, solid offensive line. And then you look at their defense. They have the defensive end in Myles Garrett. And then they also have an ascending cornerback as well. Yeah, Nick Chubb, you mentioned it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're stacked. Njoku, the tight end, the ascending tight end as well. And so, I mean, they have weapons. And I still believe, I know we're going to get into some predictions here shortly, but I believe the Cleveland Browns will at least be 10-6 this year and win the AFC North.
Gary?
Well, for me, it's like I was listening to Colin Cowherd today, and he said the Cleveland Browns are like that person that's been poor all their life, and they win the lottery. And they're going through their money. They're buying the motorhomes, the boats. They're not worried about the bank account because it's never ending. They've got all kinds of money. They've just won the lottery. And then you got some of these other teams like the Steelers. That's like old money, right? That money, they know how to handle their money. They know how to take care of their business, these sort of things. And it kind of struck a chord with me because I think that that's really kind of where it is. Let's see what they do with that new money. Let's see if they're, they've got all the skills, positions all taken care of. They look great on paper, but I'm not convinced that it's going to show up on field. We're going to see who's going to blow up first. Is it going to be, you know, the wide receiver, the quarterback, who's going to chug the beers first, so to speak, at the games? You know what I'm saying? Right?
Wow.
So that's a great analogy. Let's see how they.
Yeah, good.
Right. Let's see how they handle their business.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. No, that's probably one of the better analogies I've heard as far as that's a great way to think of it, too. Because, again, you know, Cleveland, they're like, oh, everything is open. We've got the money. Let's do this, man. So I think that's a great, great, great opportunity for them. But like I said, they do have a lot of talent, man. So let's see if they don't screw it up. But I would be remiss if I didn't say that they at least are going to be more interesting, to say the least. You know, I mean, you're probably going to pay attention to
them.
They're, you know, for sure. So that's definitely something that everyone's going to be excited to watch. All right, gentlemen, let's talk about the AFC East predictions here. Rob, you want to start off, bro?
Yeah, well, until somebody beats them, I'm going to go with the New England Patriots.
Right.
I think that's
that's a stretch right there, Rob.
Hey, well, I mean, I got to make the prediction, right?
We're totally messing with you. Yeah, we got Patriots. Yeah, we know.
Yeah, so until somebody knocks them off, I'm going to stick with the New England Patriots, even without Rob Gronkowski losing him. Obviously, until somebody figures out a way to beat Belichick and Brady, they're the team to beat. I think the Jets are a borderline playoff team. I think they're going to just miss. I'm going to say somewhere 8-8, 9-7 with the New York Jets and finish in second place. Obviously, you have to expect Sam Darnold to make some type of progress in the second season. You got Adam Gase there as the head coach. You're getting Le'Veon Bell there. Getting Greg Williams on the defensive side of the football. Got some young players and Quinnen Williams and C.J. Mosley on the defensive side of the football. So they have some pieces that I expect them to be an improved football team going in this year. But I'm going to say they're going to just miss the playoffs. but you can see some possible progress in this football team. The Bills and the Dolphins may be one of the worst teams in the league this year. So they're going to be dead last in the division. The Dolphins may be 2-14, 3-13. You know, I feel bad for Brian Flores, but his first year, I mean, it looks like they're battling out the quarterback. The last reports I've heard, Ryan Fitzpatrick is in lead to be the starting quarterback. They may be one of the worst teams in football. And I know they want to get in that the Tua sweepstakes for next year or the sweepstakes, the quarterback from Oregon, too, one of those two guys. The Dolphins have made no secret that they would love to get one of those two quarterbacks in the draft on next year. So I know I kind of skipped over the Bills. Josh Allen, they still need some pieces. Offensive line still needs some work in Buffalo before I'm sold on seeing that team improve. The defense has some pieces to be competitive. Offensively, they need an offensive line to protect Josh Allen, and that's what they don't have yet. So they're looking at a 5-11 season at best for the Buffalo Bills. I expect the Dolphins to be somewhere between 2-14 and 3-13.
Yeah, the Dolphins are going to be a dumpster fire, dude. I mean, there's just no question about it. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I keep telling you, for two or three games, he looks like a world beater. And after that, it just fits magic, becomes fits tragic, and it just goes straight down the tube. I wholly agree on the Patriots. I think everybody that watches any equivalent of a football has just walked past a football game in which the Patriots have played knows that New England's going to win that division. Part of the reason why they keep getting back into the playoffs because that division has not really mustered any kind of competition for them, to be honest, over the past, decade. So I don't think anything is going to change so far going into this year. The only thing I may say about the Jets and the Bills is there's two things. You know, the maturation of Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, who does better in year two going into it. But the Jets, I mean, that defense I think is going to be good. But if you stack the box against Le'Veon Bell, I mean, Robbie Anderson might, you know, get in the car and go 105 miles an hour down the turnpike and crash into somebody. I mean, he's a complete hit for the Jets wide receiver. I mean, look at his offseason antics. You want to talk about Zeke's offseason antics? He's up there too, really. He's in full. Outside of him, you look at it and you say, huh, well, I mean, who's going to throw the ball to? And now look at Buffalo. They did a whole lot of pinch hitting, you know, in terms of getting wide receivers. But they got John Brown from Arizona. They got Cole Beasley from Dallas. And it's nobody that's going to make you say, oh, my God, yeah, those guys are great. But those guys are, you know, to me, are solid pros at B-minus, C-plus kind of wide receivers that you line out there that know how to run routes. And I just think they have a slight tick of an advantage than the Jets do at the wide receiver position. Le'Veon Bell is, of course, Le'Veon Bell. But if LeSean McCoy can rebound, I mean, he's, you know, LeSean McCoy has been a good running back in this league. So I have a hard time trying to figure out who's going to be the second and third place team in that division. I don't think either one of them make the playoffs, so don't get me wrong. But in terms of establishing the pecking order, I think it's clearly the Patriots at the beginning and the Dolphins at the end. And I think you're going to have a bum fight between, you know, the Jets and the Bills to see who comes in second and third in that division. But clearly the Patriots are the only team making the playoffs.
Gary, what's your thoughts?
Well, I would definitely agree with that, of course, the Patriots. And I think that maybe the second best team in that division may be the Jets. And they may be only good enough to win six games. That's how weak that division is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you're right.
I agree.
All right, gentlemen, we're keeping this moving here. Patriots, they just keep, you know, they're like the big brothers just whipping up on the younger brothers, man. Sisters of the poor, whatever you want to call it.
Pretty much.
Let's talk about ranking the quarterbacks in the NFC East here. And, so this is obviously, Gary, your squad is here. And as you look at the squad, I mean, again, the Cowboys, I mean, you got Dak, you got the Giants and whatever they're doing with Eli and Daniel Jones, whatever, battling. Then you have, you know, Carson Wentz, who is, you know, which Carson Wentz is going to get for the Eagles because they got rid of Nick Foles because they have to, like, basically get to turn the reins to the young kid. And then you got, I don't know what's happening with the Redskins. You know, obviously, Alex Smith is whatever. Then you got, they traded for your boy Case Keenum, who was not great in Denver. So is it the Cowboys, maybe the freaking Eagles then? I don't know. What do you guys rate that, Rob? I'm gonna let Rob start this one off too, man, because it's crazy,
well,
man.
I know Carson Wentz hasn't completed the full season yet, but I'm going to still put him number one as far as quarterbacks in the division. Obviously, there's still a lot of upside there. There's a lot of potential from a pure quarterbacking standpoint. He's mobile enough and definitely is a more accurate quarterback when healthy in that division. Dak Prescott will be my number two guy. He started to see some progress once he got Amari Cooper in the fold last season. And, of course, you know, he still has the run-pass option, you know, capability to keep them in a lot of football games and still scare defenses enough. A fading Eli Manning, I have him at the number three spot. And whoever the starting quarterback is for Washington, number four.
whoever get that menu. Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, we don't know who it is yet.
We don't know who it is.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. I mean, I know I'm a lot lower on Dak. I think right now he's still more of a game manager in my mind. I think Carson Wentz, when healthy, has a higher ceiling, but he just has been unable to shake that injury prone label quite yet. So you can't really clear and above put him above Dak. I think it's close, but you know, me personally, I would put Carson Wentz first. I would put Dak second. And then you talk about Washington and New York. To me, it comes down to who do you think is those quarterbacks. It's going to be the rookie quarterbacks at some point halfway through this year, I believe. So you're talking about Daniel Jones or Dwayne Haskins. You already know where I'm going. I think Dwayne Haskins is going to be a better quarterback than Daniel Jones. So I'm going to put Haskins third, and I'm going to put Daniel Jones fourth. I don't think Eli makes it. I got to look and see what their bye is. But you know how it goes. When you start off bad, everybody's looking for that bye week to figure out when that rookie quarterback is going to come in that week after that. I think we see that happen in both those cases in New York and Washington.
Good call, Gary. They talked about your boy Dak. What you gonna do?
I know they did, and you know what he does is he wins ball games.
We put him number two.
Hey, if you look at how many regular season games he's won since he's been the starting quarterback, there's only one quarterback in the league that's got more wins, and that's Tom Brady. Look that up.
All I do is win,
now,
no matter what.
With that, and let's talk about a little something else. Let's talk about the health. You know, you gotta look at that too. Yes, you know, Carson Wentz, you know, top pick, all this stuff, you know, great, but he's fragile. And he's not going to make it through this season either. This isn't, and they're not going to have Nick Foles to fall back on. And if that happens, they're not making the playoffs. But I will say, as a pure, if he could stay healthy and if the cards fall in right for him, I do think he's a better quarterback than Dak. But barely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with Wentz.
By attrition.
I'm going to go with Wentz, Dak, Eli, and then whoever the quarterback is going to be for the Redskins. Who cares? Everyone won four games.
Who are on the same page? Whoever's that guy? Whoever's that guy is going to be the answer. I love it. All right, let's talk about this. We're going to keep this moving here. The top five players in the NFC West. Let's go for that. Rob, go ahead, kick it off, bro.
Well, you got to start with Aaron Donald. I mean, I know it's not an offensive player. A lot of times you think quarterback, running back, wide receiver. But Aaron Donald is the best football player in the NFC West, hands down, and might be one of, if not the best player in the NFL. He's definitely one, two, or three, somewhere in that category, in my opinion. He's definitely that dominant when it comes to defense. He's unblockable. And he's the only guy in the NFL that I think I haven't seen a player be able to block him. And, I mean, you have to have two to three guys to stop him or contain him. So he's that good of a football player. So it's clearly Aaron Donald in the NFC West. Russell Wilson will be my number two guy in the division. Obviously, going to two Super Bowls, one. What he's been able to do as a leader, as well as a quarterback on the football field for that team, I have him at the number two spot. Number three, another defensive player, Bobby Wagner. Probably the best linebacker in the game right now. You know, run sideline to sideline. Dominant football player on the defensive end. So we got another defensive player in the three spot. Number four, very underrated left tackle, Joe Staley with the 49ers. He's been steady. He's been great. One of the better left tackles in the game still. So I have him at the number four spot. And number five, I'm going to round it out with Jared Goff. I don't have to. I know you're kind of wondering where Todd Gurley. I'm basing it on where Todd Gurley is right now from a health standpoint, not what he has previously accomplished. I'm going with who I think are going to be top five players right now. And right now there's still some concerns with Todd Gurley going into this season with that knee issue. So that's the reason why I don't have Todd Gurley in that conversation at the moment. But I round up top five with Jared Goff.
Yeah, I'll sub in Todd Gurley for Jared Goff because, come on, buddy, Jared Goff is a deer in headlights, and you already know it. When he didn't have Todd Gurley to do that for him, even with the way Anderson played, he just doesn't impress me. I'd be quite honest with you. He's a lot like Andy Dalton to me, but that's neither here nor there. I'm going to go with Russell Wilson because I'm going to go with a quarterback that should have had two Super Bowl wins except for his offensive coordinator decided to get cute on the one-yard line. And he's just a stud. He's able to make something out of nothing for that offense with, you know, a bad offensive line, running backs being shown through there, not really having a top-flight wide receiver. I mean, Doug Baldwin is serviceable. I like his heart, but he's not a top-flight wide receiver. I mean, he turned, you know, wine out of water in Seattle for them for plenty of games. So I'm going to go with Russell Wilson first. But Aaron Donald's a stud, and I know he's number one in the top 100 in the NFL. But to me, I'm still going to go with a Super Bowl-winning quarterback over a defensive lineman, but that's not to take anything away from Aaron Donald. He's flat out stupid. I agree with you. I didn't know if he was going to touch on Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner is also just an impactful three down, sideline to sideline, middle linebacker that you do not want to come downhill and thump you because he will. And I just hope, you know, I think he got some platelet injections earlier and he comes back and is still the same player. But Bobby Wagner is absolutely still. And all the people that play individual defensive players in fantasy know that he is a tackle machine. So I'm going to put him at three. I still think I'm going to put Gurley at four, and I agree with you, Joe Staley. It's not sexy to put an offensive lineman there, but I can agree with that. Put him at five.
Sexy kid, Gary.
Wow. I wouldn't put a defensive lineman in front of a Super Bowl winning quarterback. It should have been a 2-time Super Bowl winning quarterback. I'll go with Russell Wilson at number one. I'll go with Donald number two.
Is that a
Wagner?
Northwest bias?
No, not really, because I hate the Seahawks.
Oh, okay.
I hate
all right.
The Seahawks.
I just got to tease you.
I hate
you
the Seahawks worse than Curtis hates the Patriots.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of hate right there.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, no, it's not. And, you know, Wagner, I think, is three. Todd Gurley's four, and you can throw whoever you want in there as five. I don't even have a fifth.
I love it. Oh, who's calling in? Let's check in. We got a caller here. Let's check in. We've been holding for a minute. Caller, welcome to Talking Sports 12. Man, what's going on? How can we assist?
Oh, what's up, man? Hey, this is Nas.
Is that Nas? Man, see, we actually speak that, and he comes on. I love it. Man, what's going on,
Nas? Welcome back.
Nah, ain't nothing, man. Cooling out. Got the dishwasher and all that going. So, is it too loud or y'all good?
I don't hear anything, bro. You're good, man. What's the word, man? It's been a lot. We've got a lot to talk about, man. It's been a minute, man. So we're definitely kind of talking about again some of the top players in the NFC West. We definitely kind of threw a nice little curveball. So I don't know if you want to add on to that or just kind of like talk on the next topic. But, again, we are here, man. So tell us your thoughts, man.
Yeah, I guess I'll just wait for the next one, man, because I can't think of, like, the whole division like that off top of the head, like everybody that's looking.
I know he might
still
be Larry Fitzgerald.
Larry Fitzgerald is still doing his thing, man. Yeah, that's going to be another interesting squad too, man, to see what's happening with Arizona. But anyway, I digress. Let's talk about we talked about the top players in the NFC West. Let's talk about the NFC West predictions. So, again, we were kind of commenting on as far as a lot of teams that we think are going to be excited to watch and whatnot too. And again, we know that Arizona is not there by any means, but I'm kind of going to keep an eye on them because obviously excitement about Kyler Murray, the new system, what's going to happen in that instance too. But yeah, so how we have this this new the division here, Rob, I'll let you kind of lead it off too. So go ahead, man, with this.
Well, I'm even one of the few people that feels like this. I think most people still feel like the Rams are the best team in that division and they're going to run it back and be a Super Bowl contender. But I still just have some concerns over this Todd Gurley situation and that knee and how much of an impact that's going to hurt that offense. And I think there may be even some concerns about their offensive line this coming season, too, from the Rams. I think the defense might actually be a little bit better going into the season, so that may help them. But it's hard for me to pick them over Seattle this season. I think Seattle is the team to beat this division. I know most of the country, most other prognosticators are picking the Rams, but I'm picking Seattle to win this division this year. I'm going with Russell Wilson, a veteran QB, experienced QB, an improved offensive line. Pete Carroll's got that defense playing really well. I know everybody in this division is going to have a tougher schedule. So I'm going to say that the Seahawks team maybe a 10-6 and win this division. I think the Rams take a step back this year. They still could possibly get in as a wild card, but I think they're the second best team in the division. I think the 49ers are going to be improved this year. We're getting Garoppolo back. I think they miss out. I think they're somewhere still around a 7-9, 8-8 team at best. In Arizona, obviously, you got a rookie head coach, you got a rookie quarterback. They're just going to go through a lot of learning curves this season. I still see them as a 3-4-5 win kind of team this year. I mean, they're still just going to go through a lot of growing pains this year. But I like Seattle, Rams, 49ers, and then the Cardinals in that division this year.
Shout out
more
to
that.
Kobe
that. I agree.
Yeah, go ahead, Jackie.
I agree with that for all the points that he made. That's what I would have said as well. So I'm not going to take too much more time after that. I agree with that top to bottom, 1-4.
The ESPN sound is going off in the background. Somebody's phone. Love it.
It's
again,
my phone.
Just really quickly.
Sorry. Just let me know my Yankees kicked the Orioles' ass tonight.
Are they shoot it?
Really quickly, shout out to Kobe Gossett, my guy for the Arizona Cardinals offensive lineman. Actually, he did his wedding, man. So congrats to him. Man. Keep doing it, bro. Even though it's going to be a rough year, but I'm excited, bro, for you. Anything else to add to that, Gary, on that front, man, as far as the NFC West, if you will?
No, I hope that it's not the Seahawks that win the division. I don't want them to even make the playoffs. So I am hoping that I kind of think it will be, and I kind of think it will. I think the Rams will take a step back because I'm also listening to some of the talk radio stuff about, you know, about Todd Gurley. And, you know, I mean, he was just a no-show last year. So if he's a no-show at the beginning of this year, that's going to put them in a bad situation. So I can see them taking a giant step back. So I'm agreeing with you know, with the Seahawks, Rams, 49ers, and then the Cardinals. Cardinals will be lucky. It'll be a banner season if they win 3 games, in my opinion, though.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll go out and they'll be exciting for sure.
They'll be an interesting team to watch for sure, but they're not ready.
Yeah, we agree. They're going to be excited. That's definitely definitely the key.
Right. I think we all got Arizona last. But they're not really supposed to win now. They're still, you know, trying to get their thing the way that they want it. So we expect them to be at the bottom. But I think the Rams still hold on, man. I think Aaron Donald is the best player in the league. Can't be stopped. He's going to make plays. I think we see load management come to the NFL, and we see them try to work around the Todd Gurley situation. And you know, kind of progress. And I don't know what they do after this year because you can't really pay a guy that much. He's a part-time running back. So, but this year, I'm going to go with the Rams to win it. I'm going to go with Seattle, of course, second. The offensive line issue is the biggest thing to me because last year, I don't think they wanted to run the ball that much. I think they did that out of necessity, and they want to open it back up and be who they were. So we'll see if that happens. The 49ers, I don't believe in them, man. Yes, they got a great coach who's really an OC. I don't know about him as a head coach. And I don't know about Jimmy Garoppolo. Small sample size, and we already crowned him. So I don't believe in those guys.
No, I should be keeping it real. All right, that's good.
You want crown? Crown.
The only thing that's a little different is the he thinks he's still giving the Rams respect as the Super Bowl champs, or excuse me, Super Bowl representatives, not the champs by any means. But, yeah, so, you know, fair enough. All right, so let's kind of switch gears here. We're still talking football here. We got 14 minutes left in the show. And I guess the question is, can John Gruden be a great coach again is the question, too. So, you know, I'm sure they took a big risk, obviously the Raiders, and they wanted to make that move to Las Vegas. But can he be a great coach again? JQ, you start us off, bro.
Well, the thing about it is, and I know I think Nas will probably agree with me, was he really a great coach to begin with? I mean, he won the Tampa Bay with Tony Dungy's team. I mean, he did. He won with Tony Dungy's team. Now, if you want to give him some credit for being able to get them over the top with Tony Dungy may not have been able to, I can give you that. But outside of that, I don't, you know, they keep calling the quarterback whisperer and this, that, and the other. I think if he does it with this Raiders team, he will, I think, legitimately at this point put himself into that conversation if they win the Super Bowl. Or at least he gets rising up from the ashes where they are right now. But to say that he can return to greatness, I don't really feel like he was, excuse me, ever really great. So I'm going to say no.
That's nice. Great. All right. That was very, yeah, I like it. Rob, what's your thoughts on that?
I agree. I don't think we're going to see Gruden totally turn his franchise around. I just don't. I don't have confidence in him as a head coach. You know, when all those stars left Tampa Bay, he was never able to bring that franchise back up to glory. Now, obviously, I know he did take a Raider team to the Super Bowl. And he built that team and left. Callahan took him to the Super Bowl. I'm sorry.
That's correct.
But yeah, so he was never able to bring that team back up to glory once a lot of those guys left that organization. We're talking about the Warren Sapps of the world, as though Derek Brooks of the world, once those guys got older, and John Lynch and things of that nature. So he was never able to bring that franchise back up to glory. And so JQ makes some very valid points. And I don't think he gets this Oakland organization back up to that point either, or Las Vegas, or wherever they're going to be playing in Allegiant Stadium next year. And this is a make-or-break season for Derek Carr, too. You know, I know they're building homes next to each other in Las Vegas. And but I still don't believe that Gruden is sold on Derek Carr. So this is a make-or-break season for Derek Carr, too. On whether or not he's going to remain, or whether or not he's going to be even going to Las Vegas to play for the Raiders. So this is definitely a make-or-break season, but I don't think the Raiders, as long as John Gruden is the coach, will be the third, second, or the fourth best team in that division. I don't think they'll ever be the best.
Gary.
Well, I totally agree with that. I don't think he was ever a great coach to begin with. I think he just had a great situation that he fell into. And I do agree with Rob. I don't think he's that coach that's going to, you know, make that team the best in the division. A second, third, or fourth. Second is going to be about the best he could possibly hope for, and I don't see that happening. And, gentlemen, I have to get off this phone. I have to go back to work. I apologize I can't be on for the full hour. God bless everyone, and have a great great rest of the show.
Nice.
Hey,
thanks for calling
me,
Gary. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary.
All right, we'll talk to you
soon.
You bet.
See you next week, as always. All right, let's keep this moving here. All right, Naj, your thoughts. Right in there.
Yeah, I don't think people get that John Gruden kind of falls in love and then falls in hate with quarterbacks. So the thing with Derek Carr is it's always going to be like that. It's not going to be like this moment where Gruden says, okay, that's my guy. Like, Gruden has always been the one who's looking for the next quarterback. And as far, you know, I agree with a lot of what people said already about him as a coach. Yes, he came under that tree, so he learned a lot of things that at that time a lot of people didn't know. So I don't know if he has any type of strategic advantage anymore because, you know, that stuff is kind of running the mill now. All of the Walsh stuff that, you know, that he had at the time was like a secret playbook. And he wasn't brought there to win. He was brought there to kiss babies, hug corporate sponsors in the box, and open up Las Vegas. That's why they gave him all that money. That's why he's there. He's going to be the face early on while they're in Vegas, and he's going to make sure that this thing is successful monetarily, not on the field, monetarily. So that's why he's there.
There it is. There it is. Yeah, and like you said, I think the Raiders wanted to win the press conference. They had to get somebody in there too, so that's why they got Sean and trying to bring back some old Jordan. Yeah. Man.
Oh, they're going to work him like Joe Louis. He's going to be greeting people at the door in Vegas, going to casinos. You want to see a show tonight? And just passing out people. They're going to work all of that $100 million John Gruden. Please believe it.
Not like Joe Louis, you are stupid.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. All right, so speaking of that, let's talk about the AFC West Division teams here. So, obviously, you got the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Broncos, and the Raiders, the aforementioned Raiders, if you will, man. So, again, I will start the floor with you, Rob. Kind of tell us your thoughts on this order, if you will.
Well, now that we know the Chiefs are going to have Tariq Hill back and Patrick Mahomes and that machine and that offense,
and I expect their defense to be better this year, too. You know, I expect them to have a much better defense this season as well. So I like this Chiefs football team, and I like them to even possibly overtake the Patriots and even get to the Super Bowl this year. Personally, I think we got a rematch of the Chiefs and the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, and I think the Chiefs found a way to get over the hump this year. Now, like I said, now that the Tyreek Hill situation is straightened out, I really like this football team mainly because I think defensively they're going to be a much better football team. They're not going to be a top 10 defense, but they'll move up in that top 15, top 16 range defense, which would be good enough for them based on that offense. And I think they'll win that division. Now, I think we're looking at a 13-3, 14-2 season from the Chiefs this season. Wow. I think they'll be that good. The Chargers, I still think they're a second-place team in this division. Even with the Melvin Gordon situation, we don't know how that's going to turn out as far as a trade standpoint, from a contract standpoint. And I probably would have them being a little bit better if I knew what that situation was like. But I think that maybe dropped them down to a 10-win season, still very good. Still think they're at least a wild card team because they just have so much talent other places on that team. Other positions on that team. Defensive line, one of the best in the league. Good secondary, good defense. I think they'll still be competitive. And like I said, it could still possibly be a wild card team. 10-6, 11-5 at best. The Raiders, by default, I think will be the third place team in that division. There is some talent there, but I just don't think they have the culture yet. And they were still unsold on Derek Carr. I look at about a 6-10 season with Oakland, and I look for the Denver Broncos to be somewhere around 4-12 and 5-11 to finish out the division. Even though Denver is loaded from Bradley Chubb and Von Miller from a pass rusher standpoint, I just don't think they can get the job done, you know, offensively.
Agreed. They're gonna wear that defense out. They're gonna be in a lot of games. Denver, that is, in the first half. And then that defense is going to get tired late in the third quarter, fourth quarter, when that offense is just so stagnant and ridiculous. I mean, when you turn to Joe Flacco as to say, hey, yeah, we need you, bro, then you are already done. So I'm with you on Denver. They have the talent on the defensive side of the ball. But Joe Flacco has rode one postseason hot streak into a nice contract and still getting chances that other quarterbacks wouldn't get. So I agree with Denver. Yeah. That's why I say it kind of by default puts the Chargers and the Raiders in the second and third spots in that division behind Kansas City. I think Kansas City is right now, the way that's going, it's not as bad as the AFC East in terms of what we talked about earlier, but I think, you know, they're going to get 4-5 wins just by showing up and putting on their shoulder pads. So they're just going to be head and shoulders above talent-wise, coaching-wise, culture-wise, ahead of that division. So I agree with the Chiefs being one. The only thing that, you know, concerns me about the Chargers even making the playoffs, because I still think they can be in second place at 8-8, will not make the playoffs. And you got Phillip Rivers talking about Melvin Gore's contract and what that can do to a locker room division. I don't know if you saw that, where he was like, you know, we still got some depth and stuff here. And Melvin Gore, another running back, got on Twitter and was like, what? Why, you know, you never count another man's money, especially your running back who you know is trying to get paid, because he's already, let's be honest, I don't think he's worth what he thinks he's trying to get. Maybe that's just, you know, a negotiation tactic to start high and settle somewhere a little bit below. But Melvin Gordon has had, like, one good year where he scored a lot of touchdowns, which is really flukish, and it's hard to predict if you can do that from year to year. But he's not Zeke. When you look at Zeke's situation, like, yeah, you need to pay that dude. I'm looking at Melvin Gordon like, I kind of need to see another year or two of you doing it more consistently and not getting hurt before I say you worth that money. But he's in that position where, you know, I'm taking a lot of pound and I'm trying to get paid now. So I get it to a point, but I just don't think he's where he thinks he is in terms of everybody else's eyes. So to me, I'm with you, Rob. I think, you know, it kind of just is sliding itself like a caste system just based off what's happening with each of those teams, culture and talent-wise, where it's like anything other than Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders, Broncos in that order would be a surprise.
Go ahead, Nash.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs, of course, I think everybody's in agreement there. And I think their defense will be improved just based on this. Teams are going to back off them and make them drive. They're not going to, you know, give up the big play. So the defense is not going to be running out there as much as they did last year. Last year, they had a lot of garbage time touchdowns or situations where the offense was just rolling, and they just kept having to get back out there and play snaps. And that kind of, you know, made them look like they were a terrible defense when they really weren't. Second place, I guess I'm thinking a little different, man, on this one.
Uh-oh.
I think Denver's going to be better than what people think, man. I think they're going to play old school football, running the ball, going off of play action, punting when necessary, because we are talking about Joe Flacco. And I think they're going to play ball control football and win. The Raiders, of course, I'm putting the Raiders next because they're going to win some games that they shouldn't win and lose games they shouldn't lose because they're the Raiders.
Yeah.
And San Diego, I think that's going to be a huge problem because – Melvin Gordon is the engine of that offense. I don't think people watch them enough, but it's not just the running, the short yardage touchdown. He catches a lot of balls out of the backfield, and he kind of acts like a, you know, a, what do you call it, a Kroger brand, Le'Veon Bell type of guy. So I
Christian
think
McCaffrey.
He's much more. See, I wouldn't even go there because I'm not putting him in that tier of the McCaffreys and Kamaras, but. You know, he's a little below those guys, but he does a lot of the same things, man. So I don't think people respect his talent much. And Phillip's getting a little old. And I'm betting against all the old guys, and one of them is going to fall the hell off. And I'm going to cash in. So we'll see.
But the thing about Denver, though, I don't know if you saw it, that Courtland Finnegan and Emmanuel Sanders got into like a for real fight, like a for real fist fight, had to be separated. Him is thrown off at practice. Your two wide receivers are fighting each other. I mean, that's just not a good look for Denver.
Competitive.
No, not at all. Hey, Rob, set up the show. Set up the we're done here. Set it up, man. Set up the OT, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning into our live portion of our show. We still got more football, baseball, and basketball into our OT portion. So we're getting ready to go into our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you that portion of our show live, so click on the same link tomorrow and you can get the rest of the show. We still have a lot more to talk about. You don't want to miss it. We have some fabulous information for you. Like I said, we got some baseball, NBA, and a little bit more NFL that we're going to get into in the OT portion. Next week, we're going to be back on the air live a week from tonight. It's going to be August 13th. 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific, our friends on the West Coast. And once again, for our friends in Hawaii, aloha, is going to be 5 p.m. on Tuesday night next week. Once again, click on the same link tomorrow. Get the rest of the show. Good night, people.
Yeah, man. I echo all those sentiments. Appreciate y'all for listening in. I don't have nothing crazy from a mouth standpoint. Nothing crazy happened to my teams this week or at Stripers Baseball. So, I'll catch y'all next week. I hope y'all download it. Y'all hit your boy up on Facebook or Twitter. Tell me happy birthday on Sunday.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Leo in the house again, right?
Say what?
Uh-oh.
I said Leo in the house. Are you Leo? Or are you?
Yeah,
Leo,
oh, yeah,
right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
My wife's Leo, too, man.
Yes, sir.
Bars be aware in Atlanta. No, bro, don't listen to him, man. Happy birthday, bro, man. Obviously, the wedding anniversary is on the 12th, man. Wifey's birthday is on the 18th.
Nice.
A lot of things happening for me for August, man. So again, a lot
you
of things.
Be broke.
A lot of things. Yeah, August, man. I got to save up.
Happy birthday and happy anniversary.
Man. Appreciate
wow.
that. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right.
Happy anniversary. So yeah.
And
yeah,
condolences
yeah.
to
so,
your bank account.
You are no joke, man. I got to set aside a small business loan during this time, man. But it's all good. Finish your thought. Yeah, so I just had to set up the OT. So go ahead with that. I think – I don't know if it was Rob or you talking, JK. I just wanted to make sure we got that in.
Well,
as
it
we
was
get ready.
We
don't say too much
that.
Longer, but yeah.
Yeah, it was just the fact that I saw that come out. And, I mean, I hear you on the competitive side, but, you know, it leads me back to when I believe it was in Carolina where Steve Smith broke old boy's orbital socket. Fighting in camp, and I don't really think they had a great year that year. It's just not when you're already struggling with the quarterback when you got Joe Flacco, and you can't really be, you know, hoping too much on Drew Lock. I mean, he may be that one rookie quarterback that rises to the top. It always happens in a year. You never know. That could happen, but I just don't want to see my number one, number two wide receivers fighting in training camp. Like, if you're fighting the cornerbacks, like, I get that. I get that to a point, the competitiveness, that piece I get. But, bro, we on the same team running the same offense. What are y'all beefing about that y'all are fighting over being the starting wide receivers for the Broncos? Like,
hey, maybe Emmanuel Sanders started looking healthy and they start fighting over the job. You never know, man. Like, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And based on what I saw last week, Drew Lock does not look like the answer. He was very erratic, very inaccurate. I know it was just one game, but, I mean, you would think that you would at least start to see some signs. And I didn't see any signs in that game on last week with Drew Lock. Very inaccurate throwing the football. So,
if he plays, they
better hope that it's Joe Flacco.
Things have gone really, really bad. Yeah, he doesn't need to play this year. He's a project. Elway likes him. Big arm.
You know what? They said that about Lamar Jackson last year, too, and we saw what happened. So,
but Lamar is a project who runs 4-3. That's different.
That's
the truth, man. And most of Lamar's success was running the football.
All right, gentlemen. So I don't know how long we want to go here if you want. So we can talk about the AFC North predictions. I know we've lost Curtis and Gary. We lost our Cowboy connection there, so we don't have to spend too much time digging in a lot of things. But, again, we'll do a shout-out for JQ's division and the Cincinnati Bengals. And, I hope I'm not it's just part of the – part of the topics here. We're not trying to throw shade or anything like that. But, you get the first crack at your thoughts on the predictions for the AFC North.
Well, part of the reason I picked Seattle is because they get the Bengals in week one without A.J. Green, so that's going to be a whooping. The Bengals just aren't there. As long as they keep investing in Andy Dalton and believing he's going to be that guy, it's just never going to work out for them, especially in that division where you see, you know, Pittsburgh is going to have to deal with it at some point here soon. Ben Roethlisberger, but Lamar Jackson, we talked about his run. If he can ever get his passing at least somewhat up to snuff, he's going to be a problem. I think Baker Mayfield's going to be an absolute problem in Cleveland. I think they just have fallen behind, and I think they've fallen behind a lot as I watch the training camps and just what they are adding or not adding to the talent pool in Cincinnati. They would need a lot of things to break right, and it didn't start with A.J. Green tearing his ankle up. I said it before. Addition by subtraction, I think, you know, we talked about that old money analogy with Pittsburgh. I think they find a way with Juju and with Connor at running back. And I think that kid, James Washington, is going to be really good for them as well. And in that second wide receiver role, Joe Hayden having a bounce back of, you know, a renaissance with the Steelers. And they talk about extending him as well. And he has always been an A.J. Green killer ever since Florida and Georgia. So you don't get anything out of that. Even when you get A.J. Green back, he's always done a good job against A.J. I hate to say it, but I think they find a way. It's going to be a really competitive division outside of Cincinnati. But I'm going to go with Pittsburgh 1. I'm going to go with Cleveland 2. I'm going to go with Baltimore 3. I'm going to go with Cincinnati 4.
Hey, hold on really quick before you talk. Anyone else? I just want to play something for JK.
Listen, Marvin Lewis is like Twinkies and cockroaches. At the end, when the nuclear war happens, those three things will always survive. I won't believe it until I see them get rid of it. That's why I am with him. He can survive a nuclear war.
So, you don't want to have Marvin Lewis.
Oh, man. We got one on you, JQ. You got me with
that
smile a few years ago now.
Marvin Lewis is no longer there, so at least you have something to look forward to at some point, right? I mean, the old regime is gone, though. I mean, we know. I mean, you're talking about Andy Dalton still, but at least you know some way, you know, there's a new coach that is not tied to Andy Dalton, if you will. I mean, eventually you there's hope somewhere down there, right? Deep down inside a little bit, maybe. Yes, no.
Not really. No.
Okay, all right.
Because they're showing no signs of trying to move on from Andy Dalton. That's the problem. Like, nobody's saying, yeah.
Okay.
And you saw him passing over quarterbacks. They keep passing over quarterbacks. They got Finley from NC State that nobody on this call is high about. That's what I'm saying. Like, as long as you believe in Andy Dalton, then you just don't have a chance. I want to be wrong in that, but, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, what more do you need to see to realize that he's an 8-8 quarterback at best?
All right, Rob, there you go. JQ set it up for us, so what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm still going to – awesome. I'm taking a chance on the Browns. I'm taking a chance on the Browns being that this is a made-for-TV team this year. This should be a fun team to watch when you look at Baker Mayfield and those offensive weapons. Like I said, he's got wide receivers. He's got tight end. They're deep at running back. And you got two of the main positions on defense covered. Well, you got a pass rusher in Garrett. You got a rising deep cornerback in the league as well. They have the pieces and tools in place to be successful, and there's no excuse for them not to be successful unless there's just poor chemistry in the locker room, which is possible because of the personalities that they have on that team. So it definitely is possible. But I'm going to take a chance in that they're going to be the team to beat in that division, and they're going to win it with 10 or 11 wins this year. I like Baltimore as a second-place team. I like what they did with Lamar Jackson on the read option. They get Mark Ingram from the Saints, another running back. They're going to be solid on defense. I don't know if they're a playoff team, but I think, you know, they could be somewhere between 8-8 to 10-6 as well in Baltimore. And I think Pittsburgh and Baltimore is right there battling for second place. I think both of them could be potential 8-8 to 10-6 teams. Behind the Cleveland Browns. So I think those top three teams in the division are going to be very competitive this year.
Nice.
I think the Bengals just have already just got a few bad breaks. I mean, the first-round draft pick out for the year. They're going to be without A.J. Green for a few weeks. Just already, unfortunately, they've got a few bad breaks. I actually thought they would be a little bit more competitive this year as well. But, you know, I mentioned Derek Carr being a make-or-break season. This is Andy Dalton's, new head coach. You know, he wants to see what he can possibly do with Andy Dalton. But if it doesn't work out, he won't be back. I think this is the make-or-break season for Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals as well. And unfortunately, like I said, they just got some bad breaks. And unfortunately, it's probably going to cause them to be in last place in that division. But it is a make-or-break season for Zach Taylor. Not necessarily for Zach Taylor, but Andy Dalton and how he's viewed in Zach Taylor's eyes.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm going with Baltimore, man. I think Mark Ingram is going to be a crazy addition for them. They're going to run all kinds of college stuff. Now, if Jackson gets hit really badly and is out a couple of games, then, you know, all bets are off. But I'll go with Baltimore, number one, man. Defense is good. They're going to run the ball, old school football in a passing league. So their teams are going to have to prepare for them differently, and that causes problems during the season. Now, they're one and done if they do get in the playoffs. I'm not getting ridiculous here. Second, I'm going with Cleveland. Too talented, but they have to learn to win, and they have to kind of gel those personalities together. But I like them going forward. But next year, I think they, you know, maybe a wild card. But besides that, I don't see them as anything great. Pittsburgh is in decline. I don't think that they're going to be very good next year. Maybe they put up numbers, but defensively, they were really bad last year, and I don't think people noticed that enough. And last, of course, the Bengals, the offensive line is shredded. Andy Dalton gets a bad rap. He's an average quarterback. He doesn't lift up anybody's play. He doesn't make anyone better. But if you put the pieces around him that are talented, you can plug him in and you can win. Problem with that is, you typically don't replace him, and he stays around too long, and he gets people fired, and then after a while you wonder, why the hell did we have him for a decade? But that's what happens with a guy like Andy Dalton. You know what I mean? Like, it can trick you into thinking you're better than what you are.
But you put him on a top-flight team, he'll be good. But with average talent around him, oh, it's going to be a disaster. He might get sacked 40 times this year. Like, it's going to be really, really bad.
40
Like,
times.
Seriously, man.
Wow. The offensive line is in trouble.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We will – do you want to talk kind of about just do you think Zeke's going to hold out for the entire season really quickly, guys, or no?
I mentioned it early in the show.
I mean, I still don't think he's going to hold out for the entire season. I just don't think he's going to pull what Le'Veon Bell did. That's just my personal opinion. I know the reports are out there that he's prepared to sit out the season. I just don't think he is, though. That's just my gut. I think at some point, I mean, he's still got 2 years left on his contract. He doesn't have 1 year left or no contract at all like Le'Veon had. So I don't think I just don't think he's going to sit out the year. I don't.
I agree for that.
I think he does have all the leverage still, though.
Yeah,
but you touched on it now. You got to pay all them damn legal bills. What does his bank account look like? That brother's going to come back. Now, he may save some wear and tear of training camp on his legs, but he's got to pay a whole lot of legal bills in the past couple of years. That brother needs every check he can get. So I think he's going to put the fear of God in him, and he's going to ultimately report.
Yeah,
that's the whole story. Does he have money? Le'Veon had money, so he could take things all the way nuclear. Other guys, like we're right now, what we're seeing is the running back market being changed in mid CBA. Like, there's no change to the CBA, but running backs figured out, okay, they're devaluing our position. They're not going to pay you once you hit close to 30, so you might as well, you know what I mean, pull the nuclear option.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what people are doing now. And Zeke is smart for it, but like I said, if you don't have the money where you can afford to miss checks, then eventually you're just going to fold. And Jerry knows that, and I think they know his financial status. So I think they know he's going to bend eventually.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, good call. Just really quickly, let's talk about the Braves and the Twins recap. It was good to see the Braves bounce back. Again, the bullpen has been a little challenge. Get all the new guys, and we weren't able to do things, but it's good to see us kind of like represent. Acuña started off with a home run, and that was just great, obviously. So good call on that. Anyone, you want to have any thoughts about that, JQ?
No, I mean, I think you just got to give those guys a chance. You got some of them coming from the season. You got Martin coming from the Rangers. You got Green coming from Detroit. You got guys and Melancon coming from San Francisco who are starting to get back on the upswing. But you guys coming from bad teams by and large, and you know they get put in the pressure cooker of expectations, for a team that has higher goals than teams they just came from. Sometimes it takes a little while to adapt to that, and you get to playing bad baseball with a bad team, and you don't think it affects you like that, so you get put into a winning situation. Everybody's looking at you like, okay, you had good numbers on a bad team. You have good numbers on a good team. And it changes them. It shouldn't, but sometimes it does. It seeps in. And I think they just need a little bit of time to kind of adjust to two of them, to, you know, National League baseball and to the teammates and to the expectations put upon them. So I think over the rest of the season, it'll even out. But, it's a good bounce. Like, that's a really good series with two division leaders in the Twins and the Braves. That probably isn't getting a whole lot of love nationally, but is not going to be a World Series preview, I don't think. But two good teams playing in a three-game set there. So, you know, good bounce back for the Braves.
What the hell do we do all that cheating for and get fined and all that if we're not going to be willing to trade some of the prospects and get arms in there? This is the juice ball year, man. Trade prospects and get arms. This makes no sense whatsoever. Hell, I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, oh, they're about to come back. Nelson Cruz started hitting home runs off his back. So I'm like, dude, we're about to lose again. Like, just get some arms. See, that's why I can't be a baseball fan. It's too frustrating, right? I'm trying to get into it, but it's too frustrating, man.
They got young arms. They got some young arms on the way, so they didn't want to get them up. And the guys they were trying to get from Atlanta and Pache and Waters are going to – I think you're going to be really impressed with them if they stay on the trajectory they're on. They're not on a Acuña trajectory. They're going to be really good. You may have a fully loaded outfield here next year or in 2 years in Atlanta. It's going to be like, damn, I'm glad we didn't trade those two guys. If you bring those two guys and can keep Acuña in the center around them, watch out.
Mm-hmm. You're just trying to, like, make it through this year, man. You don't want to block anybody. You don't want to get somebody that's going to block those guys too, man, because Ian Anderson looks like he's the truth. But, again, he has to get through AAA, see what he's been doing. And I agree. Christian Pache, he's the next catcher. You know, you're hoping that Brian McCann – can hold off, you know, maybe one or two years, but then you got your guy there. Then again, Ender hasn't been playing too well. So does Drew Waters play? Does he play center field? He plays outfield, right? I mean, he can play
he plays outfield too.
Man. So, yeah, so like you said, that's kind of what you're kind of hoping for. You don't want to block him, so that's kind of that as well too. But, you know, again, nothing brings me more joy to hear Rob talk about Atlanta teams and listening to what we're talking about too, man. So, anyway, that's making my night right now. So, let's really quickly wrap this up here, and let's talk about I do want to save a couple topics for I know NBA is kind of touch and switch too, but I do want to kind of wrap up as far as the National League, Major League, or Most Valuable Player part run. I'm going to let Rob kind of handle that, and then JQ, and then, you know, Najee can kind of wrap it up as well, too. So go ahead for that point.
I mean, Kristen Yelich, the numbers that he's putting up are just phenomenal, man. I know I was trying to text you guys on last night. But, man, with the way the Dodgers are playing, it's hard for me to go against Bellinger as well. And it's really a tough one. This is almost one of those 1A, 1B. But I'm going to give the slight nod to Bellinger, even with the numbers that Kristen Yelich is putting up this season in the National League.
Yeah, and you saw them starting that commercial and that campaign marketing between the two of them. Finally, Major League Baseball, you know, get out there and promote your stars. It reminded me of, I don't know if you remember back, I think it was in the 96 Olympics, those two guys that were competing in the heptathlon. And they kind of had the commercial
Dan
come back
and
forth with
something.
Them going to win the gold medal.
I kind of feel
like that's what they're trying to do with those two. And it's very smart for baseball. They got to get out ahead of it because those two and Mike Trout not being bigger stars outside of baseball and just in the marketing and you know, in the stratosphere to me in America, given how ridiculous they are in their sport, is a failure by Major League Baseball. I think it's going to be Yelich if he wins the home run title because Chicks did the long ball, and that's going to win it. If you think back when Votto lost to Stanton, Votto had him beating every category except for, I think, like RBIs and home runs, and Stanton won the MVP. So I agree with you. I think it's going to be Bellinger if it holds true, but Yelich is back like 336 right now. He's just on a whole other level of hitting, and I didn't see that coming when he was playing with the Marlins. Like, he was good, but he's just taking it to a whole other level in Milwaukee. Uh-huh. So I agree. It's one of those things where I would love to see them split it, but they won't. So the power numbers are always going to win. The home run numbers are always going to win. So I think it's going to be Bellinger.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be wrong. Bellinger or Yelich, it really doesn't matter. I would add the third thing to it and say, how can you not bring pitchers into the discussion all of a sudden? I know they got their own award, but to be good now as a pitcher, like, yo, man, the Verlanders, the Coles of the world, like, yo, you got to give it up to them for doing what they're doing and being dominant this year, because no lead is safe this year, no game. Like, you can't put your phone down and go make a sandwich and come back and think, like, oh, yeah, it's baseball. No, four runs just got scored while you were making your sandwich. Like, yo, yeah, we gotta give something extra to the pitchers, man. To be an all-star, man, now, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. Good call. All right. So I want to talk about two quick basketball references, and then let's go ahead and wrap up the show here. Actually, there's almost two I can actually talk about too. But I guess the Clippers and the Lakers opening night is going to be a great opportunity to see kind of what's happening. That's just, I think it's that is one of those crazy. That's just a great opportunity for that and for Christmas. I think, you know, the NBA, they're recognizing, as far as that, which baseball, as you said, JK, they should recognize that. That's going to be good. And then I guess, will the Clippers make LeBron better? I guess this is the question for the topic, too. So that's on you, JK. So what's your thoughts on those two things, if you will?
They're either going to make him better or make him worse, because when you get burned, when you have Kawhi say, yeah, hold on to your trade kicker, but guess what? I ain't coming anyway. And then you get Paul George to come with them. And then you get Beverly, and you've got three of the top 10 defensive players. And like I said, it's either going to make him better or make him worse. There will be no staying status quo for LeBron, because I think the narrative is starting to be, oh, he's getting over the hill. He got hurt last year. You know, are these other guys now passing him as the best player in the league? I think he hears all that, and I know he does, and he sees it. He's going to come out with a chip on his shoulder. It, for both of them, it's going to be how well they all gel together initially. That first game, I think, may be a little bit more uneven because it's the first game of the year. You know, how much are they going to play in training camp. It's going to take a little while to figure out where everybody wants to be on the court, what spots they like, how you get your spacing together. So that first game, I don't think it's really going to be a true indication. Maybe the Christmas game, and we talked about it on text. I think that's overkill. I mean, they're going to play four times. You put them on there on the first night and Christmas Day. But I understand the NBA. You understand we're going to promote our stars. We're going to put our marquee matchups right in your face all the time, a la Boston and New York and baseball. You're going to, all 19 of them games you're going to see on primetime TV. So I get what the NBA is doing because it's going to drive rating numbers. But those two games they play, you know, in the second half of the season, I think it's the ones that are the ones you're going to look at and say, okay, these guys now have some footing under them. They've got some games under their belt. They understand what each one wants to do, not in like little summer league games where everybody's just dunking and throwing windmills off the backboard, like for real basketball, how we want to use our sets when it comes to winning time. Those last two games are the ones that I'm looking more forward to than the first two games.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, somebody's going to get blown out. Game one, sets aren't crisp. Everybody's getting used to each other. So big game like that, somebody's going to get blown out. It's going to be entertaining, and all of the hysteria online is probably going to be more important than the actual game because we're going to all be engaged. But are we really acting like the Clippers spending money in free agency and coming back with a loaded team with expectations? Like, come on, y'all. Paul George's shoulder is going to slide into his wrist. Kawhi's calf muscle is going to fall off. These are the Clippers. Why are we acting like we don't know this curse is about to happen again? Because this is what they do. The Lob City Clipper fans were yelling at me 5 years ago. Oh, we got Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. We're about to win it. Oh, the Clippers, man. Stop it. There's a curse there. It doesn't go away. Sorry. It just is what it is.
Wow.
I think from a marketing standpoint,
the NBA.
That man
said his shoulder's going to slide to his wrist.
That's crazy.
Detachable shoulder blades, and he went to the Clippers, and we're acting like it's gonna work out. Like, okay.
I think from a marketing standpoint, obviously the NBA got it right. From the standpoint of having the Lakers and Clippers on opening night and on Christmas, you all both make some really good points. You know, as far as from a chemistry standpoint, those teams probably definitely not going to be where they are by the time at the end of the season. But it's still going to be very intriguing from a fan perspective. It's going to have people tuned in right away from the start of the season. And I think that's what the NBA wants. And, I mean, the Clippers and the Lakers are just a part of it. I mean, the Western Conference is going to be unreal in the NBA next season. I mean, when you look at the Lakers, you look at the Clippers, you got to think that the Nuggets, you know, are going to be still in the mix. You got to think, you look at a team like Portland, they've improved. You look at a team like Utah, they've improved. And then the Rockets, you know, can Harden and Westbrook play together? It's just going to be intriguing. It's going to be very intriguing and very interesting to see that Western Conference next year. And then, you know, Porzingis, him coming back with the Mavericks, you know, what that's going to look like as well next season as well. So, I mean, there are a lot of intriguing things that's happening in the Western Conference next year. I mean, it's going to be unreal to see that conference. I mean, the Eastern Conference, now that Kawhi has left, I mean, you kind of narrowed it down to a three-team race again. I mean, you really only talking about the Sixers, the Celtics, and the Bucks. Unless there's some team that comes out of nowhere, I mean, you're basically just down to a three-team race in the East. And those three teams could all be very good. But, man, the Western Conference, man, you look at the depth of that conference, it is insane. I didn't even say Golden State. I forgot about them. And that's a team that's been, what, five straight finals now? And but I didn't even talk to them. And you still have to think that they're going to still be in the mix. And come playoff time, they will have Klay Thompson back. So you have to think that they're even still going to be in the mix. I'm not writing off Golden State as much as I hate them. You have to think that they're still going to be in the mix as well. But from a marketing standpoint, that's who everybody wants to see on opening night and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question is Carmelo Anthony being blackballed by the NBA? That's the question.
No.
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 Just think about
that.
That
was a topic.
Yeah, it is.
I know.
It is one of the topics. I don't think he's been blackballed. You know what I think Carmelo's problem is? Just think about this. Vince Carter just signed another one-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks at 42 years old. But you know what the difference is? Vince Carter realizes where he is at this stage of his career. Carmelo Anthony doesn't. And until Carmelo Anthony sits down with a team and says, I will do whatever is asked of me, whether that be the 10th man on some nights, but that means I don't play at all on some nights, and some nights maybe I get into 5-10 minutes when you need a shooter on the floor. If he can't, until he sits down with a team and tells them that he's willing to play any role possible, then teams will come calling. But right now, Carmelo Anthony still thinks he should be a starter in the NBA, and he's not. So until he sits down, I don't think he's been blackballed. Just teams want him to sit down and say, hey, I'll do whatever's asked of me. I know some nights I may not even get in the game. Some nights I may need to be on the floor or have a shooter down the stretch or something. He needs to do whatever's asked of him. And that's the difference. I mean, I can't say that I think Vince Carter is that much better than Carmelo Anthony at this stage. But Vince realizes what he needs to do to help a ball club at this stage, and Carmelo doesn't.
And Vince is willing to be a mentor, and I think he's looking to be a mentor, especially to a Trae Young, and he's relishing that opportunity to do that. Carmelo is not. The second piece is, if you watch Carmelo, some of his, you know, outtakes from First Take, it comes across like he feels like the NBA owes him to have him be in the league. And it's like, you can't approach it that way. Like, they want people that can, like you said, that are willing to come in to play a specific role, or say, I'm willing to take any role and I'll take less money, but I love the basketball so much and I'm willing to mentor and give some back to this game, to these young guys. I'll do whatever you ask me to do, dog. I just want to be in the NBA and enjoy it, whether it's on a contender or not. But he feels like, you know what, I deserve to be on a team and get, you know, 9 to 15 minutes a game. It's like, nah, bro, your skill set has passed. You look at your draft class, the only one that's still there and balling is LeBron James. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes the ship has just sailed for you because you've been around so long and your skills deteriorate because outside of Tom frickin' Brady, you know, Father Time is undefeated. And it happens to the best of us. And I agree with you. So he sits down and takes a hard look in the mirror and says, am I really willing to be the 11th guy on this team and just sit down and be a mentor and hand clap and pass out Gatorade and help, you know, pick up the warm-ups off the floor when the other guys check in? If I'm not willing to do that, then, you know, I don't have a place in the NBA. Am I willing to do that? That's all it is for Carmelo right now.
Udonis Haslem just got a 17-year deal in the league, another one-year deal with the Miami Heat. Udonis Haslem realizes
right.
who
well,
he is.
Well, Udonis has always been
a role player, so it's a little bit different. But
two jobs, though. That's player slash security, so that's a little different. You know what I'm saying? That's a double shift he's working out there. Melo is fine. You just have to make the right choices. They chose to go, him and his agent chose to go to Houston. It was a really bad fit. They shouldn't have done that. And at that point, nobody was going to bring him on for the veteran minimum at what he can provide. At this point, he's a rotational player, stretch four, a little bit of three. That's it. But he's not, like, important to the point of where you would get somebody off your roster to get him. But I think he'll be on the roster next year. But, you know, I don't necessarily want Carmelo mentoring anybody. I just want to bring him on a team.
I don't see him as a mentor type.
That we play. Right. He's still good enough to play, though. And I think some people are kind of doing him a little wrong with how they're talking about him. Like, he's not washed to the point where he can't play. He's still good enough to be in a rotation. Now, what he does in that rotation – that's the story.
Yeah. Again, I got two words for Carmelo. Jeremy Lin already got a ring over Carmelo, which is crazy. That's a whole other conversation.
Come on, buddy.
And I hope that.
Now I got to set Jeremy Lin on fire if you got time. Jeremy Lin walked into the NBA during the strike short season where people were playing back-to-backs in 3 and 4 nights. He walked in fresh legs, tore up the league for 2 months, and then everybody said, oh, we remember you, you're Jeremy Lin, a fringe NBA player. He got paid way more than he should have, and his career has lasted because he's a professional good guy.
But as far as him being like a top flight point guard talent, y'all saw the playoffs.
Oh, no.
Toronto could not play him. They wanted to. They could not. They attempted to.
Yeah.
They could not.
Yeah.
He's just not good.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying that because he got a ring over Carmelo. That was my only point, but that's all.
Awesome. Yeah. He ain't even happy
know
about
role.
That ring.
That was a hilarious
no, he's not.
Media post, though.
Yeah, well, he got a ring, though. That's all. At the end of the day, Carmelo
hey,
don't.
Hey.
So.
Good job taking some minutes off of Trae Young's legs last year and allowing Atlanta to treat Trae Young the right way and not run him into the ground. So salute Jeremy.
There it is. There it is. But then, and it's funny because, you know, the second piece is regarding the whole thing with, oh, I'm hoping that Lade's not talking junk to me. Anyway, but no, like I said, it is interesting about Carmelo because you do realize that, you know, he's making some pretty bad decisions right now too. So, back
yeah.
up really quickly. were you going to say anything else, JQ?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay. Okay, all right. We're going to wrap this up. Again, we appreciate. So let's go ahead because we'll be here all night talking about a lot of things too. I love how Naj keeps it real. I'll always call in, man, because we love your perspective on things
absolutely.
Too, man. Because it's
always good talking with y'all, man. If I get home and y'all on, I'm definitely calling in, man. So salute. That's what's up.
Appreciate that.
Rob, I'll let you do your last thoughts if you want to talk about your boy Dave Griffin, and then we'll wrap up the show, man. Because this is probably exciting. I don't want the lady to say welcome to Fog Talk. Goodbye. Hang up on us. So go ahead.
Well, as we close the show, I'll just briefly talk about the All Decade team. In the NBA, I'll just talk about the first team. Four of the five was a no-brainer to me. Obviously, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry. Those four was a no-brainer, you know, putting together my first team All-Decade team. The fifth one, I mean, I wound up agreeing with the NBA and putting James Harden there as well, but I was going back and forth with Harden versus Westbrook on who that fifth person was on the All-Decade team. But in putting together my own All-Decade team, I wound up agreeing exactly with the first team. Now, I didn't necessarily agree with the NBA on the second and third team. But on the first team, like I said, four of the five was, to me, no-brainers. If it was like a Hall of Fame ballot, it would be first ballot. So, I mean, LeBron, Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry. When you talk about All-Decade team from 2010 to 2019, Those four players were no-brainers. But my first team, I struggled going back and forth with Harden versus Westbrook, but I settled on Harden agreeing with the NBA first team all decade. So that's just my closing thoughts. I don't know if you guys got any comments on that or if you had a chance to see the all-decade teams that the NBA posted.
Good point.
I
would have put Westbrook because I hate James Harden and the fake basketball he plays, but I'm biased in that sense. But, yeah, I think Westbrook has a much bigger effect on the NBA. Finals as a youngster, doing what he's done, the triple-double stuff. I know it's artificially inflated, but not as artificially inflated as James Harden the last 3 years. So I go Westbrook ahead, but I agree on everything.
Yeah. And the thing I struggle with, I couldn't, you know, both of those guys to me have found they just haven't gotten it done in the playoffs enough. But overall, they've had the better, you know, it's hard to find other players that have a better decade than those two. But I still wrestle on which one of those should have been on the first team. But, you know, I went back and forth between Westbrook and Harden.
Wrap it up.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in. Another great edition with Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Once again, we're going to be back on the air on next Tuesday night. Next Tuesday night is going to be the 13th, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. We're going to get in the heart of the NFL training camps. We'll be the first full weekend of preseason. Get to see some of the young rookies play. Things of that nature this weekend. We have some thoughts on that. Obviously, Major League Baseball is in the stretch run as well, and it seems like the NBA has steadily been in the news and their offseason as well. So you never know what's going to happen over the next week from the NBA standpoint. So we're going to have more predictions. I know we covered quite a few divisions tonight. We're going to get to the rest of the NFL divisions here in the next few weeks. Then we're going to start getting to our college football predictions as well. So you definitely don't want to miss these next coming up weeks here
in Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all for listening to the show and downloading. Appreciate my homeboy Nice for calling in. He is hilarious. And that man said he had detachable shoulder blades. I'm not fully over that statement yet. That is hilarious to me. I will talk to y'all next week. Y'all have a good week.
I'm laughing at JQ, your statement, bro. I can't right now, man. I can't. Oh, man. Talk about distractions. And I blame Rob for that one. So. But it's,
that was a nice distraction.
I can't even get
yes, Lord.
I'm like, wait a minute. Look, I got to end the show right now so I can not talk. you guys, again, American putting up with us. Gentlemen, have a great week. Happy birthday, JQ. Seriously, man, on Sunday, man. We'll be thinking about you, bro. And, you know, do your
Happy
thing.
Birthday,
don't let
Thank
Rob get in you, man. Just, you know, do your thing, man, and enjoy it.
Bars
and,
beware.
I'll be celebrating. Oh, man. have as much as you want, man. have as much
Make
as
sure
you want.
Make sure you have enough beer on you.
Enjoy, JQ.
I will be Ubering it.
Well, at least you're responsible.
Man. No, I can't.
Oh, man.
I appreciate you, bro. Hit us up next week, bro. Next time you're on, as always.
For sure. Thanks for letting me on, man. Y'all be safe. Man.
As always. Yes, sir.
All right, man.
Have a great week, gentlemen. Good night.
All right, y'all.
I can't.